Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Rosemary Bova on the line, who is an upcoming author in one of our Mission Matters books, our Business Leader series, and she's also the president of Bova Enterprises. Rosemary, I'm so thrilled to finally get you on the show. Thank you for showing.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I'll let the audience know in advance. We're going to talk a little bit about the book today, but we're not going to give all the secret sauce and all of the writing that Rosemary is going to bring to it, because we still do sell books. We want you to buy them when they come out. But I will say this, we will be bringing Rosemary back on the show for a follow-up interview where we will do a deep dive. But for today, the goal is we're going to get to know Rosemary and Bova Enterprises as well, of course. So we'll start this interview the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So, Rosemary, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Rosemary, what mission matters to you?
So, my mission, and it's been a mission that I've had for a really long time, is to transform people's experience in the workplace. You know, we spend like a third of our time sleeping, at least we used to. I don't think people are sleeping that long anymore, but we also spend a third of our time at work. And I really am a believer that what happens to you in the workplace, you take in and you transmit that to your friends and family. And so I believe that if we have a more satisfying, productive, joyful experience in the workplace, which allows for success and profitability, then our family life is going to be like that. And our children are going to grow up differently. And so I'm really very passionate about this transformation of people's experience at work. It saddens me when I hear people say, oh, I hate going to the office, or I hate my job. It's really because I know it actually is closing them down. Your heart closes when you don't have joy in your life and satisfaction from work. You begin to close down.
I get that. And it's one of the reasons why I was so excited to have you on the show, because people need to hear your message. They need to hear what you're doing, how you're doing. And then really at the end of the day, you know, there is hope. There's ways to deal with these challenges. So great to have you on. I guess just to get us kicked off, let's go a little bit into the book and what you propose to bring in your writing. So what inspires your writing and your topic?
My topic is the power of four. And I learned about the power of four many, many years ago when I had the good fortune of spending a week with Buckminster Fuller, who most people don't know because he's been dead a long time. But he is the creator of the geodesic dome. But I also have learned over the years, actually rather recently, that four and the tetrahedron, the geodesic dome is made of tetrahedrons, and they're four equilateral triangles together, and they have structural integrity, so you can't crush them. And he used to say that all of life was made of tetrahedrons, and so I've kind of ruminated and pondered on that for, you know, decades actually. Recently, I found that the tetrahedron was one of the sacred symbols, and it's gotten me to kind of embrace this whole idea of the importance of sacred symbols, how that creates or how that influences work, and looking at what's happening in our society and what's happening in the world. Right now, we are in such times of uncertainty. So I look at the power of four, and I've identified four elements or principles that I think every employed person should know. And so it's for the CEO as well as the shop floor person. And if you know these four principles, I think everyone can begin to create their own artistry, their own metaphor or creation. It's really a creation of how much of this am I going to use and how much of that, and they can begin to reclaim their work life. So it's very important for me because I'm very upset about what is happening in the world of work.
Yeah. And
where people are, particularly our young people. I mean, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And those of us that are older have a sense, and it's not to say that we did everything right. Mm-hmm. It really has more to do with how can we be, I like to say, midwives to the new, you know, the new work systems, and how can you take what used to be and add what could be and blend that into something that's totally new and satisfactory, successful for everyone.
So before we go further down that line, because I do want to get, especially coming on the, you know, tail end of the pandemic, a lot of things happened, a lot of displacement, people changing professions, people, you know, changing jobs by voluntary or involuntary by any method, like changes happening. But before we go down that line, which I definitely want to explore with you and get your perspective, let's pause for a moment and tell me a little bit more about Bova Enterprises.
Okay. So Bova Enterprises is like a niche consultancy. A friend of mine coined the word coach sulting.
Coach sulting, that's a new one for me.
She coined it. I have to ask her if I could use it. I mean, because I really do coaching and consulting as well. And I do program development. So Bova Enterprises is really about leadership development and about looking at the organization's spine of a mid to large corporation and identifying where there might be some fractures that are invisible. Yeah. You know, it's like people get these fractures on their bones and, you know, they don't, they show up on an X-ray, but they don't, you know, there's not a bone sticking out of the arm or the leg. So it's there. And how do you help that to heal? And what we do, I work with executives to help them bring their full self to their roles. I teach them about management, about a lot of things about management that they don't really understand. For example, a lot of managers would say to me, you know, I give so-and-so the task, and then, you know, they don't do it. And I say, well, but you're accountable for their output. They're not accountable for their output. They're accountable for doing the best job they could. But you're accountable for their output. So you are empowered to do that. And people look at me and kind of sometimes scratch their head. But things like that, where people, you know, just don't know enough about managing and perhaps managing in this new environment with the technology kind of rolling out as quickly as possible.
So, and where do you, like, obviously, and this is one of the things whenever I speak with coaches or consultants, like, obviously no leader, no business owner, wants to, like, there, nobody's intuitively doing a bad job. Like, nobody has that. Nobody starts a business and says, hey, I don't want to be good at this.
Right.
Or I don't want to, like, that's obviously not where someone's heart's at. It's that'd be a waste of their time. But I'm interested to hear your perspective. Like, and I know it's going to vary obviously from co-founder to whatever their background was, size of company. But what are some of the common themes when you start working with a client? I know some of the common themes that kind of come up over and over again. And the reason I ask you this question, by the way, is because I know there's some people that are watching this that might have some of these challenges, and I want them to know that they're not alone.
Yeah, well, I think that more people have these challenges than not. And I think we live in a society where it's not okay to say that you're challenged or that you don't know something. And it's why when I work with executives, oftentimes they are long-term assignments because I can work with somebody for years, actually, because I'm helping them grow through their different roles.
Well, you're coach salting, so you can't like be a basketball player with one session, right? Or whatever you analogy you want to make, right? Like it takes time, right?
Well, it takes time. I mean, you can do, I mean, I offer sometimes strategic strategic sessions. They're like half day sessions. Mm. And it's just for a matter of a person who wants some outside thinking. Mm. I happen to be gifted with a mind that puts things together that people don't normally put together.
Yeah.
And I'm trained as a social work clinician. Mm. So I build trust with people. And I think that's unusual in the workplace, the building of trust. In fact, one of the things I believe in is that the manager relationship with a worker is one of the most satisfying relationships a person can have in their lifetime. Yeah. If you have a good manager and people that really want to be employed, people will do anything for you. And but they just feel vibrant and alive and valued and appreciated. And the manager is getting what they need. So it becomes a very it's a thriving environment to be in. So I don't know if that answered your question exactly. Well,
you did, but I want to go further. So what are some of these common challenges that you find when you're looking under rocks? Like you're like, oh, saw that one coming. And like, because I know you're intuitive, by the way, and everybody's going to be different, but you answered it, but I want to go further. So like, what are those common things?
Well, oftentimes people think that it's behavior that is affecting the performance of say a work unit. And in actuality, what I have learned is that it's not behavior so much. It is really the structure, the infrastructure of how that unit, that business unit is designed. So that if people don't have the authority to do something or don't are not accountable for something, it causes people to make side arrangements. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, I'll go over to Joe because Joe knows that if I help him out, he'll help me out. He can count on me. So you have this, years ago, it used to be called a social system. Mm-hmm. It's not called that anymore. I don't know if there's really a label for it anymore. But you have this way of working that is not has nothing to do with what the organization design is. And truthfully, the org charts that come in a company really just show compensation. They really don't show what the work in the roles are and who needs to report to whom or account to whom for what. So one of the things that I do is I will go in and demonstrate, do a demonstration project, going in an organization down two functional areas, say marketing and engineering. And, you know, I will show them where, how that work lays out. And I use a grid. I mean, I'm in a lot of my work is informed by a body of knowledge called requisite organization. So I use that knowledge to then uncover what's going on. It's interesting because I heard yesterday, I'm based in New York City, and I heard that there is a new law coming into effect that companies have to report the salary range that is associated with the role.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's very interesting. And I think that's a new, I think that's only in New York City. I'm not sure if it's a New York State law. But it's when you do these analyses, you can find out all kinds of twists and turns and lopsided, who's getting paid three times as much as the other person.
Yeah.
And the other person is doing much more work, a bigger job. Yeah. It's really quite fascinating. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to really learn and to thrive and to appreciate how important working is.
Leadership versus management.
Yes.
But tell us your opinion on that. Leadership versus management.
So management is a role in an organization. And leadership, I believe, has to do with characteristics. It might be something like personality, I know there is some literature that says, you know, to be a leader, you have to be, you have to induce trust in people. Well, in order for people to get their work done properly, they need to know what's required of them. And so that gets involved with tasking, which will be discussed in the chapter that I wrote. Management is really about overseeing the flow of work in any company. Whereas leadership is kind of, it's not anchored to anything. It's kind of, you know, I mean, I could be a leader. You could be a leader. I mean, everybody could be a leader. I mean, we can have a song about this.
But that sounds like a song. I'm a leader. You're a leader. Who's leader
there
now?
Is a song. I don't know where it came from, but
I'm in.
But it doesn't get the work done.
Yeah.
And I want to say in the last 20, 30 years, there has been a de-emphasis of management, so that when I would go into work systems to to work and I would say to people, you know, well, how are you managing? And they said, well, I'm not a manager. I'm a leader. And I said, well, what is that? And they really couldn't verbalize it. And people really, most people really just want to know what you want them to do.
Yeah.
And they want to be able to do it as best they know how to do. And they want you to help them do it better. Do you know what I mean? They want you. Yeah. They're assuming that since you're the manager, you know more.
Like people want to do good work. Like they want.
People want to do good work. Yeah. I have been in this business for many, many years. I have never come across someone ever who said, you know, I don't give a shit about. Excuse me. I don't give, you know.
We're in New York. It's okay, Rosemary. Okay.
You know, it's kind of like it's like people want to do a good job. They want to be valued. They want to be appreciated. It's when you keep treating them poorly.
Yeah.
That they begin to close down, and then they say, I just keep my blinders on. I go into work and I just keep my blinders on. And it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate because work can inspire the individual, but it can also energize the company. We could have so much more.
Yeah.
If we were able to build cultures that were vibrant and allowed for thriving. Of the individual as well as the company. It's not an either or. It's a both end.
That sounds like such a much more pleasant experience than where maybe some people are at, right? Like there's an end of the road there. That is achievable, right?
Absolutely. I think it's very achievable. Mm-hmm. And I think, listen, you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I do.
That helps.
I do believe it's achievable, and I'm coming upon more people because of the pandemic. A lot of people have reflected on their own life and who they are, what they stand for, why are they in business? I mean, why are they working where they're working? So I think there is a much more of a readiness, an opportunity to look within, because they've already begun to peel off some of the layers that they've put on to protect themselves. Because some of these workplaces are really not pleasant.
Yeah.
Some of them are not pleasant at all.
So. I want to switch focus here slightly. Okay. So organizational spine. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So the organization spine is actually the way the roles are defined in the organization. So if you think about the body, if you think about your body and you think of your own spine, we know that the spine has nerve endings going out. You have all of these discs that separate different, facets of the spine. You have I'm not going to know my science here, but you have the lumbar.
All right, this is fine. We got it.
Okay. So we have this spine, and the organization spine is really what allows where the roles fall in an organization and how they interact with one another. So for example, you could have compression in the spine, in your actual spine, is going to cause pain down in your foot or, in your neck or, God knows where. Mm-hmm. But in organizations, when you don't have the right spine, mm-hmm. it will also cause dysfunctionality. And it's hard to pinpoint where the dysfunction is coming from unless you do what I call an analysis of the organization spine. And we do that, and we do it using a grid. And we can show people actually where there are problems. And sometimes the problems require very minor fixes. Mm-hmm. It's really fascinating. These are not things like, you know, you have to have major surgery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're really minor, but it makes all the difference in the world.
Ah, it's great. And so how does you use that concept or that method really to help businesses? Like, how does that relate?
Well, you have to have someone who is probably hurting and yeah. knows that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And wants...
Might be a pinched nerve somewhere. That's right. All I got on the medical
That's
analogy.
Right. A pinched nerve,
might be a pinched nerve, right?
Pinched nerve, and they want to do something to correct that. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot out there. If I use the medical model, there's a lot out there that treats symptoms but doesn't get to the root problem.
Mm.
The organization spine and the analysis that I do really gets to the root problem.
Yeah.
It's not an overnight. You're not going to take a pill and feel mm-hmm. better in the morning.
Yeah.
You're going to be thinking you need a leadership team or a managerial leadership team that wants to really flesh this out, that wants to know why this is happening. And it enriches all of the players because they're delving deep into things that we've never taught before. Really not taught it before.
Do you find that when leaders go through this process, like sometimes there's just these, because I feel like there has to be a lot of aha moments. There has to be a lot of times where it's like, wow, I never would have caught that if I didn't do this. Do you find that happens?
I think it happens very frequently. I mean, I was in a consulting to a major medical institution here in the city. Mm-hmm. And I was interviewing the manager of the person that I was doing some coaching with.
Mm-hmm.
And during that process, he was very senior. He was asking me a question or so. So I'm interviewing him about this third party.
Yeah.
And he's suggesting something to me. And I said to him, do you mind if I step out of my role of mm-hmm. interviewer and use this as a teachable moment for you?
Mm.
And he was a little startled, mm-hmm. but he said, okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. And he became my client after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was because there was something about that he didn't understand about the managerial role that he was doing his best. He was trying his best. And mm-hmm. and doctors in particular are not, they're trained as doctors.
Yes.
And they're trained to be collaborative. Mm-hmm. They're not trained to be to have authority over another doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to teach them about management is totally different because they have to move from their doctor role into their managerial role. And that requires holding people accountable and you being accountable for the outputs the others are producing.
Mm.
So it becomes very complicated. And you have to have people that are willing to learn. I mean, that's the other part. You need to have a willingness to say, I can do better. I know I can do better.
Mm. Well, I never thought about that dynamic. That is interesting, how doctors are trained and that like doctors are not necessarily...
They know nothing.
Yeah.
They know nothing about they know nothing about management. And a lot of academic institutions mm-hmm. have specialized programs for them. But it's different having a program that meets maybe 3 weeks over the course of a year or 18 months is very different than having somebody that's going to work with you on a monthly or every other week basis for an hour or two, because you help integrate everything. They're going to help you to really get rooted in what you need to know.
Great.
So, it's a very different model. And it's much cheaper, actually.
Well, Rosemary, I have to tell you, it's been great connecting with you and having you on the show today. I'm so thrilled to get you published. And as I mentioned before to the audience, we will be bringing Rosemary back on for a second part of this interview so that we can go deep into her writings and into the book. But for now, I just have to ask, what's next for you, Rosemary? What's next for you? What's next for Bova Enterprises?
So what's next for me is I've been hesitant to say that I'm a thought leader, but I am a thought leader.
Absolutely.
And I want to do a lot more speaking to organizations and speaking to managerial leadership group so that I can infuse them with some of these ideas. And then we can, you know, certainly have, you know, ongoing projects that come from that. But I think the time is ripe now for getting this work out there in a way that's much more heart-centered. Mm-hmm. And the both and is so important to me. It's having the company thrive as well as the individual workers thrive. And demonstrating that you can have a very satisfying managerial subordinate relationship. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful relationship when you have it.
It's great.
I've been fortunate to have it numerous times.
If people want to learn more about Bova Enterprises and to connect with you and your team, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to do that, you can connect directly with me at rab@bovaenterprises.com. Mm-hmm. My website is bovaenterprises.com. I'm on LinkedIn. And they can connect with me through Mission Matters too, I guess.
Absolutely. And we'll put all that information, by the way, in the show notes so that our audience can just click on the links and head right on over and check out your site and connect as well. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time connecting with Mission Matters or the platform or listening to an interview or engaging, we're all about bringing on mission-based individuals to share their mission, what they're doing in business, and what we can all learn from the ups, the downs, the sideways, and everything in between, right? If that's the type of content that sounds fun or interesting or inspiring to you, we welcome you. Hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based individuals coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Rosemary, I'm looking forward to our next interview, but thanks again for coming on today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure as well.